Welcome to the first lecture of the string theory course. The lectures will be mostly based on lecture notes, and Polchinski Volume 1 is also a good reference for material. I will every week, I think usually on Monday at 1 to 2 p.m. if this works for you guys, otherwise some other time. I have office hours where I'm happy to answer any questions about string theory or quantum field theory. And what can I say about string theory? It's a complicated subject with several different ways to start. And it's in many ways an incomplete subject. In a way, I'm going to try to explain this today. Today is going to be, you know, a bit more general slash philosophical compared to other lectures. Please just ask whatever questions come to your mind on the subject, because today is the right time to ask them. So in the next lecture, we might get into more technical calculations. So you might have started to you started seeing quantum field theory, for sure. Even saying what quantum field theory is can be tricky. I'm not sure I know how to say what quantum field theory precisely is. But you might encounter things like a path integral of some sort. Or, you know, some kind of integral over configurations of fields in space-time with some action. And, well, you can write a path integral doesn't really mean that you're doing something sensible. Making sure that it actually exists and makes sense is tricky. It's sort of required to some degree, solve the theory itself. Often, it's really a standby for some sort of regularized definition, maybe a lattice system. Really, anything that has some kind of continuum limit, any physical system which has a continuum limit will end up being something like a quantum field theory in local physical system. And this is not a great way to define the quantum field theory, because typically you can write a gazillion different lattice systems regularizations which are actually trying to give you the same thing. But it's still, if you know, as an existence proof, if you want, you can take your favorite lattice system, like an Ising model, and try to convince yourself that it has a continuum limit if you're careful. Anyway. And then if you have a quantum field theory, you pick a classical solution or something like that, you can do something called a perturbative expansion, which is just an expansion in 1 over h bar. In h bar, sorry. So something like, you know, e to the 1 over h bar, something classical, plus something of order 0, plus something that perpetual loops. You likely have learned how to compute these various terms in terms of what are called Feynman diagrams. So maybe your classical calculation involves some diagrams which have no loops, and then your calculation one loop may require Feynman diagrams that look like these, and actual loops, maybe you'll have something like this. Etc. I know. I can try to do something more interesting. You learn that you can do calculations in quantum field theory using perturbation theory, using Feynman diagrams. These calculations might or not be relevant to describe something that is actually going on in the quantum field theory. So typically, you might have, if you're lucky, there will be some regime in which this is a good computational tool. But it's just a formal power series. It's not convergent. It's not defining something. Although I'll come back to this in a moment. And roughly, each term in the sum is a sum over Feynman diagrams of some topology. And then each Feynman diagram can be reasonably described as computing a process where some particles propagate in space-time and they occasionally do something that might create or destroy some of the particles, and they propagate from one interaction point to the next, just following the quantum mechanical behavior of a single particle. So there are just individual particles that are propagating in space-time and occasionally doing something. So sort of you're summing over histories of a collection of particles doing things. And then, of course, you might totally ask, if I just have these, can I somehow make into a definition? I think the jury on this is still out. There's definitely a hope that there are some procedures to resum this sort of perturbative theory if you could compute it at all orders and actually define something out of it. This is called resurgence. I don't think it's quite clear if it works for generic theories, although for very simple theories, there is some success. But anyway, here's a bit of a digression. So, do you have any questions about this picture of quantum field theory? Okay. So, in a string theory textbook, you start from something that looks like this. So you don't have a path integral, you don't have a regularized definition, nothing like that. You just say, okay, I find some rules that consistently define some kind of an expansion. And where each term is computed by summing over histories, not of particles, but of string-like objects. And here my ability to draw things might be put to a test. Let's see what I can do. So you're trying to describe processes where string objects is somehow sweep a two-dimensional path in space-time, propagate, meet, join, and separate, but all in a very smooth fashion, different from here where there was some, particles were really disappearing and reappearing. You can make the resemblance between these pictures more careful. Okay, there is something. It defines a consistent perturbative expansion. And you might wonder, is this a perturbative expansion of a thing? Can I go back in some way? Is there a string theory for which this is the perturbative expansion? Any questions? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to ask, what current is answer? Is convergence of this this expansion that we're kind of looking at guaranteed by the self-consistent rules?
Oh, it's not convergent.
It's not convergent.
Yeah, it's a perturbative expansion. It's an asymptotic power series.
So how is it different from a UFT?
It's worse. It doesn't have this. Okay. So as a perturbation theory, it will have some nice features which you like better than features of perturbative quantum field theory in the presence of gravity. But it's just a perturbation theory. Yes?
Since we take this leap to like promote like zero-dimensional objects to one-dimensional objects, why don't we go farther?
Because we don't know how. Pretty much. Might be possible. But we see some technical reasons for which
so
we can
it's
do.
No theoretical problem, basically.
Hmm?
So it's, there is no like intrinsic problem to like to consider like membranes or something like that.
Well, I don't know what to call an intrinsic problem. There is no. Nobody knows how to define an idea of sort of summing over histories of a membrane. While we have an idea of how to sum over histories of strings and of particles, for a reason that I will describe. But you know, it would be interesting to know if there are, you know, some of these mathematical reasons for which it's not possible. I don't think that the question has been explored as well as it could be.
Is string theory has this because it's two-dimensional? Because the thing you draw is two-dimensional, and then is that the difference, or is there something else that makes the members' word volume even harder to sum?
See, in order to sum over histories, you need to sort of have a way to describe the histories. Here, I mean, we'll see in more detail what that means, but I just, somehow there is a finite dimensional space of histories or shapes for Feynman diagrams and for these string diagrams, but the space of shapes for higher dimensional objects is very infinite dimensional and nobody knows how to integrate over that. I think that's a fair description of the situation.
Mm-hmm. This may be rushing a little bit, but I've heard that in string theory we can have open and closed strings. So
For now, I will add open strings in the next board, in the next three boards. Yes. So, why should we believe that string theory is more than a perturbation theory? There are various reasons. One passes through holography. And something called the Tuft expansion. So the starting point is a quantum field theory of fields which are matrices. So, you know, schematically you can write a similar path integral, except these fields are now n by n matrices. And there is an action that perhaps I write schematically as some trace of a function of your matrices. Okay. And then you can write down a perturbative expansion for this. But Tuft's genius was to observe that any amplitudes you compute in perturbation theory will actually be will contain both powers of h bar and powers of n. So while there it was, we can study an expansion so that where h bar goes to zero, Here we can start an expansion when h bar goes to 0, but h bar n is fixed. When you do so, you reorganize the perturbative expansion. I will go over the Lagrangian expansion further later on. But for I just want to say that the perturbative expansion starts, I'm writing something wrong. I need to be careful. I'm getting the wrong power there and there. I don't know why. I'm being silly. I have a memory hole. I forget if I should put a 1 or a 2 here. Forgive me. I'll fix that. but the point is that you're the perturbative expansion sort of get reorganized. So the power series in lambda are actually convergent. Typically. So you get a new form of power series, and you can argue that these new coefficients behave in a lot of ways like the amplitude of string theory. There's something called the planar diagrams that I will introduce in another lecture, which allow you to sort of do this identification. So every quantum field theory of large matrices has a special expansion which looks like a string theory. So for a string theory that emerges like that, you can totally go back, meaning you totally have something that produces it. So, right, this is often called holography or has other names, but it tells you that there are a lot of string theories which do have a non-perturbative completion. And there are a lot of string theories that, you know, they do. Pretty much every quantum field theory of large matrices will define such a string theory. Okay.
I don't understand, what's the holographic part here?
Sorry?
What is the holographic part here?
For now, let's just take it as a name.
Okay.
It refers to the fact that often this quantum field theory lives in a different number of dimensions, smaller than the string theory does. So if I sometimes I might have, say, a four-dimensional quantum field theory, but the Tufte expansion describes strings moving in a space which is five-dimensional, actually 10-dimensional. But again, I will come back to that. Now, as far as I know, this is the only situation which, until now, we've found where we can confidently say this string theory perturbation series is an expansion of something. Unfortunately, this sort of procedure until now only has produced string theories, which describe strings moving in universes which are very different from our universe. Well, what different means is essentially that they have different shape at large distance. But to elaborate on that, I want to talk about some other properties of string perturbation theory, which are sort of the reason people got excited about string theory to start with. So let me lower this blackboard again. So it's often the case that if you look at a string theory at low energy or long distances in the appropriate sense, it will resemble the quantum field theory, meaning that these strings like objects move around space-time from far away will look like points, same way as a proton looks like a point even if it has structure. And the sort of particles that you find include often a graviton. So this is reason number one people got excited about string theory. If you can find the completion of string theory and perturbative the definition of string theory, you will have produced something which at low energy has gravity. That is something we are really interested about in because our universe at low energy has gravity and we have no clue of what sort of theory describes our universe at short distances. And here I should put like 15 inverted commas for reasons I'll discuss. Right, so we have no idea how to write theories of quantum gravity in general. You know, theories which at low energy have gravitons. There are all sorts of theorems that tell us that constructions we are familiar with will never give you a graviton at low energy. And so finding an example where you find gravitons at low energy, it's really exciting. And so, for example, these holography setups tend to give us theories of gravity, meaning they are that these quantum field theories, although they look like they are quantum field theories, they also, in the different language, describe a universe with gravity. It's a weird universe. It has a factor with negative curvature, which gives you sort of time-like boundary, where you can sort of sit at and look and probe things inside. And the answers to these questions are the correlation functions of the quantum field theory. Now, our universe does not have, appears to have positive curvature. The only boundary that it seems to have is in the far future. We have no idea if we can find a similar construction for a universe that looks like ours, or even for flat space. Okay. Any questions? As I said, feel free. It's a good time to ask questions.
Do we know any string theory that doesn't have that kind of perturbative expansion?
This one you mean?
Like you said that for all the string theories that have like that ribbon expansion or like world sheet expansion, they can be UV completed because of holography?
No, I said that everything that comes from a quantum field theory can be completed by definition because there is a quantum field theory. I don't know any way to define string theory besides something which has a perturbative expansion of this sort. Now, there are definitely string theories, which are the ones that we'll study in most of our lectures, for which we do not know an holographic recipe. Although here I need to get into another topic that is really subtle and confusing to me. So another beautiful property of string theory, or the string perturbation theory, it has no couplings. So here in quantum field theory, the couplings pretty much tell you what's the chance that various events, where these singular events will happen. In string theory, there are no singular events, so there are no couplings pretty much. Everything that looks like a coupling in your initial definition of the theory turns out to be the expectation value of a field. Again, this got people super excited, you know, because it's like, ha, this theory is unique. It either describes our universe or it doesn't. Well, that was a little optimistic, because, but unfortunately, it's optimistic for reasons which are really deep, and that I think you sort of get to see those reasons through string theory examples. So, ingrained in our, at least particle physics perspective of the universe, there is the idea that you find out the laws of the microscopic world and derive what happens at longer distances. This is really ingrained in the way we discover the universe, right? We start looking at shorter and shorter distances and find simpler and simpler theories from which you could deduce what was happening at longer distances. The reason this is happening is because it's a property of quantum field theory. Quantum field theory has something called the renormalization group flow. It sort of tells you that, yeah, the UV stuff determines the infrared stuff and not the other way around. But gravity is not described by quantum field theory, so gravity has no reason to follow these rules. In gravity, there is no notion of arbitrarily small distances, because the moment you try to look at short distances, you make a black hole. It's very likely that in a theory with gravity, you don't have this sort of flow from short distances to long distances. So for example, so the very idea that you find the microscopic theory, the theory of everything, and then derive the universe might be wrong-headed. It's perfectly possible that the large-scale structure of the universe controls your microscopic description, or your elementary description of the theory. So, and this is definitely what we see here. On one hand, string theory has no coupling, and whenever you find different ways to define your string perturbation theory, there is kind of a way to relate them. On the other hand, quantum field theories are different. Different theories of large matrices are just different theories. So what gives? Right? On one hand, we have this string theory that really wants to be super unique, no couplings, no parameters. But then the UV completions are legion in holographic setups. And what's going on is that all of these UV completions give you string theories in universes which look different at large scales. So somehow the boundary conditions of your universe, or what not, end up controlling the microscopic definition of your theory, which I find a bit mind-boggling. It's pretty much the extent of what I can say about it. But right, no couplings, but boundary conditions. Vacua. It looks like whenever you work with string theory, what you see, it's dependent of what used to be. in a very strong way. I don't know how to say it properly again. The only way I can say it is that there seem to be, you know, bizarre connections between the large-scale structure of the universe and the microscopic degrees of freedom you use to define the universe. And it might be that it's just a bizarre feature of holography, and there are other non-perturbative definitions that don't have this feature. But having not seen any, I feel a little doubtful sometimes.
Professor, could you repeat, like, why is this UEIM mixing? Should we do, why should we have this UEIM mixing for gravity?
Well, because it's not a quantum field theory. So the notion of RG flow is appropriate to quantum field theory, and things that are not quantum field theories do not have a reason to. I mean, UEIR mixing is just a way to say, ha, this does not behave like a quantum field theory. Well, no surprise, it's not a quantum field theory. A quantum field theory is by definition, if there is a definition of quantum field theory, is that it's a theory in which I can ask questions about arbitrarily small pieces, small chunks in space-time. I can ask independent questions about the things that are happening at arbitrarily short distances. The moment I try to ask these questions in gravity, I make a black hole and I destroy space-time. So gravity is not a quantum field theory. And yes?
Can we say that it is an effective quantum field theory in the IR?
You can totally have gravity as an effective field theory. Yes. Now, there are theorems, though, that you cannot have something which is a quantum field theory at arbitrarily short scale and has gravitons at low energy. Weinberg-Witten theorem. And the reason is very simple. Quantum field theories have something called a stress tensor, which is a gauge invariant local operator. And in gravity, the stress tensor is not gauge invariant. Pretty much. I mean, the theorem at the end is just a way to state this fact. So yes, it's really hard to find something which at low energy gives you a theory of gravity. Extremely challenging. Because gravity at long distances describes a continuum system. But as I was mentioning, every time you try to take a continuum limit of something, you typically end up in quantum field theory. So it's really hard to discretize gravity or anything like that. We don't know any way to do so. So this picture, as bizarre as it is still the only situation where we can have gravitons emerge from a microscopic description. Albeit a microscopic description, I call it microscopic. I should call it more fundamental or something. It's not microscopic in the same space-time where the gravitons live. Quantum field theory lives somewhere else, in a space-time of different dimensionality. So, yeah, confusing, definitely. Right, enormous risk of overhyping pieces of the story, especially, I don't know. Okay, this is more or less the comparison with quantum field theory, string theory, and their basic properties. Now, there are two more topics I should mention before. What time do I have? 11:15 or
15? 15,
right?
15.
Yes. So, I would like to discuss supersymmetry, and I would like to discuss D-brains. Any more questions about these two blackboards?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why can't you think of the expansion from coming from some sort of Polyakov action or something on the worksheet? Like, why are you avoiding?
Well, that doesn't give you the expansion. That's already here. So the Polyakov action is what you use to describe each individual worksheet.
Yeah.
is not something that gives you the perturbative expansion. This parameter g is not in the Poulenc of action at all. It's like saying, can I use the action of a single quantum mechanical particle moving freely in space-time to define a quantum field theory? Not quite.
Historically, then, how did this work? Because to think about these, why did we start from here, or did we
not start from here? Oh, we did not start from here.
No, not but
yeah, here.
Took the continuum limit and found something that looks like a QFT, but not quite. Like historically, like how did this?
Oh, work? This is not to study. I'm saying quantum field theory is not something you do to study gravity.
Right.
Yes, typically.
But I'm just wondering, like, historically, how did it progress to, like, where did you start?
So string theory emerged from an attempt to describe strong interactions. Because there was this idea that quarks were bound together by a string. And so people decided to see if they could treat the string as an elementary object and go perturbation theory like that. Then they tried to find a spectrum of, say, globules in this theory, and they found that there was a massless globule. So most of them threw it away. And somebody else noticed, oh, this massless globule behaves like a graviton. I mean, it has two indices as in massless. And it has just the correct interactions to be a graviton. And then, perhaps this is telling us something about gravity, and then it was brought back. But then bosonic string theory has also a particle of negative mass called the tachyon. So again, you throw it away. And then somebody, I don't know for what reasons, decided to try to put supersymmetry into the game. And they find superstring theories which had no tachyon. The lowest energy particle was a graviton. And so they started studying it again as a theory of gravity. So I don't think I will discuss in detail what supersymmetry means, but roughly it means that your theory has bosons and fermions and that they are related to each other. Very schematical, you can imagine having a boson for each fermion. Schematic, but you know, it's not terrible. And when you compute loops, bosons and fermions appear with opposite signs that tend to cancel out in various ways. So supersymmetry leads to simplifications. Exact computations. Etc. And in supersymmetric strings, it can be employed to get sort of no tachyons. So at some point, people started classifying the supersymmetric string theories that they could write down. Started producing a long list. Type 2a, type 2b. Heterotic. Two types of heterotic strings. And a few more stuff. Okay, so there was a big zoo. But then people realized that some of the quantities that they could compute exactly made sense not just as power series, they made sense as just functions of G. Functions which could be continued to values where G was not close to zero. And very often, if you did this exercise, you might end up in a different string theory. So there were sort of dualities, so-called. Like, okay, you had a bunch of perturbative expansions, but it really looked like these were perturbative expansion of some bigger object which had different limits, worse than theories were a description. So this was the hint for the existence of some more primitive theory which admits various descriptions. But no intrinsic definition of this more primitive theory is available. And this sort of unicity of the blob idea is still subject to these caveats. So supersymmetry provides us some of the simplest examples of holography. So there are supersymmetric, large, and quantum field theories, which can be tooth expanded to get type 2a or type 2b in various backgrounds. No, universes of different shapes. Okay, so any questions about supersymmetry? Yes?
Is Susie the only way to get rid of the tachyons in the theory?
Not clear. Probably not. But getting rid of the tachyons, you still need to sort of have comparable number of bosons and fermions, which cancel out almost exactly in a lot of situations. I think the short answer is I don't know. Yes. I mean, after all, there are a lot of string theories which are not supersymmetric and exist. So the answer must be yes. We just don't know how to do it. Like if you take Yamil's theory, with large number of colors, or that will have some string theory dual, presumably, but we have no idea how to write it down. It will have no supersymmetry for sure. Yes?
Can I have fermions in bosonic string?
I'm tempted to say possibly yes, but I don't know how. Well, of course, I mean, I could have said, I just give you an example. But when you say bosonic string, I don't know. In a non-supersymmetric string, yes. Right, I can take QCD, just quantum chromodynamics, Yamil's theory, coupled to a fermion at large n. That will be a string theory. No supersymmetry, it has a fermion. So probably yes, but just see, there is a terrifying Lampost effect in string theory, which is, there are so few examples that we know how to define, and we know how to define pretty much because, I can give you reasons another time. And it's very easy to assume that the properties of these things we know how to define are universal properties of string theory, but probably they aren't. There are many obstacles to our ability to understand string theory. One very basic obstacle is that we don't actually understand quantum field theory very well. And in order to compute these S's, you need to be able to do quantum field theory in two dimensions. Because the motion of the string in space-time is described by quantum field theory. Now, if the quantum field theory is weakly coupled, is free, then we know how to do stuff. But it doesn't have to, and we just don't know how to work with that. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Are matrix models, do some matrix models serve some non-perturbative definitions here?
And if sure.
And if so, how does that fit with the picture of the IR
that being IR data in a way?
Well, this matrix model describes strings and moving very weird universes, which are, I don't know, two-dimensional. And perhaps not geometric or, yes.
I wanted to ask about this zoo of string theories you mentioned.
Yes.
Where do they come from and how are they different from each other?
They differ from what are the rules that a string uses to move in the space-time, pretty much. So there is a sort of, you can classify the three theories that you could use to describe the motion of the worksheet, and that gives you the zoo. And then there are other theories which we don't know how to talk about, which presumably could enlarge the zoo. Yes.
So I wanted to ask that about it, like pre-worksheet CFT. I guess like it's easier to compute some stuff there, but then compactification is hard. So why people don't like non-critical strings to get the at least dimensions correctly?
Sorry, again.
So like people take like critical strings because it's free CFT on the worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So it's easier to compute some stuff, but then
yes.
compactification is terrifically hard to manage, right? So why people don't like non-critical strings?
Or also critical strings, but with non-geometric compactifications. That's also something that is my pet peeve.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why people don't work on it?
Because they don't know how, and so they pretend they don't exist. No, I kid you not. Okay, there is like people that study all the possible Calabi-Yau manifolds. You can put the type 2A string theory on, and see which particles do we see at low energy. And okay, great exercise, but there was no reason those six extra dimensions had to look like a Calabi-Yau manifold. Maybe they're not geometric. Why are you just ignoring that? Because you don't know how to describe the motion of a string in something that is not geometric, and so you pretend you cannot. It's not a thing. Anyway, right. So lamppost, yes, lots of lamppost effect. Very unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. So. You mentioned here there's some rules that govern how strings move in this space-time.
Yes.
And they're somehow connected, I guess, to the 2D QFT that you said that you govern them. So my question is, what data do I need to start doing string theory?
So I don't know the most general answer to the question, but to do string theory in what's called a conformal gauge, a bosonic string theory in conformal gauge, you need a two-dimensional conformal field theory with central charge 26. If you want to do a super string theory, you need a super conformal field theory with central charge 15 and a certain number of supercharges, four supercharges. If you give me the data, you can get for free a perturbative expansion of something.
And so those two examples in particular differ in some vacuum that they live on, or what is?
Well, they're different theories. I mean, they're the bosonic one will be more likely to give you tachyons. But even those words make no sense, because unless the CFT has a specific shape, it will not describe a universe where there is flat space. So when I say tachyon, I'm assuming the Lorentz invariance somehow in the target space, in the space-time the string is moving in. That doesn't have to be. So in a sense, the tricky part is to sort of find which constraints to put on the worksheet theory so that it gives you a universe which, at least in perturbation theory, looks like what you would like to see. Our knowledge of two-dimensional quantum field theory is improving. There is something called the Bootstrap program, which is very promising. So maybe at some point in the future, we'll be able to say, I want a 2D CFT with these symmetries and this list of low energy, local operators of of some scaling dimension so that my universe has these properties, and then I can make a string theory out of it. It's possible. A perturbative string theory out of it. Now, one of the more tricky aspects is that I said there are no couplings. That includes G itself. So in quantum field theory, the perturbative expansion might or not be valid in certain regimes. But this depends on things like, you know, am I looking at short scale or long scales or things like that. The validity of the perturbative expansion of string theory depends on dynamical considerations which are out of your control. The coupling is like a scalar field. If the scalar field wants to be large, well, your perturbation theory is garbage. There's nothing you can do about it. So supersymmetric string theories with enough supersymmetries have the property that the coupling becomes a scalar field which has no potential. So those allow you to define universes so you can freely tune the coupling and go to a place where perturbation theory is valid. Now, of course, a universe is not supersymmetric and that does not have a massless scalar. So those configurations are although great for getting an idea how string theory might work, are not terribly useful for making contact with the universe. So there is it's a dramatic tension. A universe does not look like a weakly coupled string theory. So a perturbative expansion is only going to get you so far. So think string theory at the moment is more like a tool, same way as supersymmetry in many ways. It's at the moment mostly a tool to see how universes might look like. And then you can try to draw some conclusions from that or some lessons while remaining very keenly aware of the Lampost effect, which is a serious danger.
You said that our universe is not supersymmetric?
Yes, at least if we can see.
At least as we can see?
Yes.
Is that like a close thing? Like maybe we know that for sure, or it's like we haven't seen high?
I mean, you can never know what, in quantum field theory, you can never know what happens at shorter distances, the ones you can explore, pretty much. So it's like saying there are no Smurfs, no microscopic Smurfs in our universe. We don't know because short enough distances, who knows, right? Because, you know, see, when you study quantum field theory textbooks that are old enough, they get so excited about renormalizability at some point. They say, ha, if you require our quantum field theories to be renormalizable, there are so few terms you can put in the Lagrangian. That's great. It means we can predict how the universe looks like if you assume renormalizability. But they had it the wrong way around. It was more like the only theories which have the property that there is a large scale separation between something else and your theory must look like renormalizable theories. So they were not finding renormalizable theories in the universe because those are better than others. They were finding them because it's what you find if your microscopic theory is very microscopic. And they are the theories which are the best at hiding what's going on at microscopic length scales. Like a non-renormalizable theory will just tell you, oh, I'm going to break down at this scale. Find something else. And the way it breaks down typically gives you hints about what could be above that. But in a renormalizable theory, you have no clue. The theory, in principle, could make sense all the way to arbitrarily short scales.
So are all effective field theories renormalizable?
No, the other way around, actually. So effective field theories are theories which are working particularly well at low energy, which typically means they work poorly at high energy. The couplings flow, and if they're flowing to something weak in the low energy, it will be typically strong at high energy. So effective theories tend to be infrared free, but non-normalizable, non-UV complete. On the other hand, theories like Jan-Mills theory, they are terrible to describe in infrared, like Jan-Mills theory tells you there are gluons. You never see a gluon. But they can be true at arbitrarily high energy. Now, in the standard model, there are some couplings that become strong at high energy, like because there is a U1 gauge field, and because there is a 5^4 coupling in the Higgs. So the standard model is a strange, is a kind of hybrid beast. It sort of lives in the middle. There are some couplings that are going to go bad in infrared, and some are going to go bad in the UV. And also, there is gravity around, which also is going to go bad at UV. So we know the standard model has to be completed somehow. But unfortunately, the things that go bad, like this, the coupling of the Higgs and the gauge coupling of the U1 gauge field, they go bad at very high energy. So out of our reach.
I wanted to ask you about this. So, like, what does it mean to find QCD string? Like,
it means find a worksheet theory, which after you do this calculation, produces the Tuft expansion of your Jan-Mills.
When you gave examples about these QFTs that describe the dynamics of the worksheet,
yes,
you said examples that were CFTs. Do you have like examples that doesn't need to be a conformal field theory?
That's another of my favorite topics because I don't understand them, so I like them. So in principle, the worksheet theory, so when I lied when I said that worksheet theory is a CFT. So the worksheet theory, it's a topological field theory of some very weird type called cohomological topological field theory. And one way to produce such a theory is to take a conformal field theory and somehow kill the stress tensor in a specific way. And that's called a conformal gauge. So a string theory has a conformal gauge when you can find a conformal field theory and then kill the stress tensor to get the worksheet theory. Now, there are presumably other ways to define worksheet theories. For example, Pedro Vieira here has been doing a lot of calculations in N equal 4 super Jan-Mills and his string theory dual. These calculations use very high power integrability techniques. To the best of my knowledge, there is no CFT there. He's not doing calculations in a conformal gauge. So again, I think it's most the Lampost effect. I don't think there is any guarantee or reason to believe that, they say, the QCD string will have a conformal gauge. So I said worksheet theory, but it's not clear it would be a CFT with. So OK, you could complain about my optimistic take on the bootstrap program, that what if the string theory I want does not have a conformal gauge? Yeah, and there I don't know. I need to understand better. So can I bootstrap a topological field theory in the worksheet? I'm not sure. So definitely there are subtleties there. I think I'll do deep brains next time.
I was a bit confused about the connection between the perturbative expansion of strings and the holography.
Yes.
So you mentioned that in string theory, we don't know how to find the clean formula for the integral, partition function. But here in holography, in this equation, we know that.
Yeah. Here we have the partition function, and we wait to get a string theory out of it.
Okay. So we are assuming that string theory is quantum field theory of matrices in this for holography?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's right. So holography, one way to interpret holography is just to say, well, yes, this string theory has an open property completion, is exactly the quantum field theory of large matrices. This is not everything that holography might mean. There are other meaning to holography. There are versions, you know, there are holographic things which do not have large matrices, for example, and which are not dual to string theories. So here I should say holography for string theory. That's right, holography, you know, holographic situations where the toothed expansion plays a role. Any other questions? Okay. I'll see you in the next lecture.